On this episode of the Launchpad Podcast, we are talking about who is going to still be here the next time the Rockets make the playoffs, and when will they make the playoffs? Would you pursue a star this offseason in a trade? And a little bit of draft talk. We'll be joined by a super special guest that may be with us, you know, moving forward. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome in to the episode of the Launchpad Podcast presented by Clutch City Control Room.
We are
joined today by the second person that's making, you know, their appearance on the new version of the show. But as y'all can probably see him there in the YouTube feed, we are joined by Rockets Wire's own Ben Dubose. So, Ben, glad to have you here. Go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, rocketswire.usatoday.com, the Rockets Wire on Twitter. I'm at Ben Dubose on Twitter. And yeah, glad to be a part of the Clutch City Control Room launch. Really happy for you guys. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I do appreciate that for sure. And also for the people that are watching YouTube, I'm sure you'll see that Ben is, you know, clad in his Astros regalia.
It's opening
day. Astros start today. By the time most of y'all are hearing this, it'll be, you know, the game will be going on, if not over. And so we'll know if the Astros started with a win or a loss. But you know, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can follow the pod at Clutch City Control Room. Our link tree is in the description of that. So if you want to find the Apple, Spotify, YouTube, it's all right there in the link tree. Prague, go ahead and tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, you can find Airport Prague at Paulo Alves NBA. That's Paulo Alves NBA. Everything I do, from podcasts like this one to live shows on Twitter Spaces to articles about the NBA, will find itself linked on there.
You have to go change your display name once we finish this, now that you said that. You have to change
Airport
to
Airport Prague.
That is classic.
Yo, speaking of that, we got no display names.
Oh, the display names should be up. Thank you for... I don't know why they're not up. Well, we'll try to figure that out in a second, but while we do that, let's go ahead and get into our first segment here. Jalen Green, right? He's now on game number 5 of his, you know, 3-point winning streaks, I believe. How do you guys think? I mean, obviously the answer here obviously is going to be, you know, exceeding all expectations, but you know, how do you think Jalen has looked? And how do you think he's looked given where your expectations were coming into this season, right? Because, you know, he came in the season, had kind of like a little letdown. The Mobley mob people were really, you know, at our throats. And then the tables have turned a little bit. You know, the Cavs are kind of limping into the playoffs. And, you know, Jalen's doing exceptionally well right now. So, Ben, go ahead and hit us off.
The wild part for me about it is how calm it is. A lot of times when you see a rookie go through that type of scoring stretch, you think that they're just, you know, if not outright chucking, just being really aggressive. The reality is, and I pointed this out the other night during the Brooklyn game for Hot, Red94 on Twitter said before that he predicted that Jalen's going for 40. And I pointed out that over half of the first quarter was gone and Jalen had yet to even attempt a shot. And, of course, he still ended up with 30 anyway, which speaks to how good he is right now. But I also think that speaks to his mentality. It's not like he's pressing. It's not like he's just putting up numbers to put up numbers. No, they're coming within the flow of the offense. He's just developed that much as a shooter. He's getting that much more comfortable. And in a way, what really impresses me the most about this, all the things that we want him to eventually add to his game, certainly the strength that we've talked about, developing the upper body, finishing through contact, which is going to help him become a better defender as well. All that needs to happen, and in my opinion, is going to happen over the coming offseason. And, you know, my guess is his body looks a little bit different when we next see him, you know, at training camp in late September. But what he's doing now is just basically a more efficient version of what he's been all along. And that really encourages me because it tells me there's still more room for him to grow. It's not like he's really radically transformed his shot profile all that much. He's just making a lot more of those shots. He's just far more comfortable. And I think that also speaks, by the way, to, you know, the argument for Jalen Green in the pre-draft process was always about the intangibles, about not just day one, but about, you know, week to week, month to month, year to year, the consistent, just sort of staying with it, the level-headed approach. And despite that, despite the fact that he got off to such a terrible start, for him to sort of figure this out on the fly, even when he hasn't really remade his body or done any of the things that, you know, long term we think are going to help turning him to, you know, a superstar at the NBA level, the fact that he's still scoring, you know, the last couple of weeks, basically 30 points a game on, you know, elite efficiency for the year, his true shooting percentage is up to like basically 55 now. I think in his recent run, it's like 59, 60, something crazy like that. And again, it's just sort of what jumps out to me most about it is just how ordinary it feels. It's not like he's pressing. It's not like he's just trying to put up numbers. It's all coming in the flow of the offense. It's just all very calm. And that just, you know, to me, that's what sticks with me more than anything else. It's like he expects it. It's like, you know, it's nothing that he's really celebrating because it's what he's born to do. Like he said the other night, you know, I'm a bucket. That's what he's learned about himself. And so if he's doing this now, with the body of a 19-year-old, I know he recently turned 20, but this is basically his 19-year-old season. Just imagine what he's going to do in the years ahead once, you know, he builds more strength, they work on his mechanics a little bit more, he gets more experience. If he's doing this in year one with basically, you know, just adjusting on the fly, imagine what's going to happen over the offseason and the years ahead. This was the bet on Jalen Green, your belief in what he not is on day one, but what he is going to turn into with the combination of his work ethic, his intelligence, his court savvy. And if this is happening at the end of year one, yeah, it leaves me really, really optimistic for what's going to happen in year two, year three, and so on and so forth.
And just one follow-up with Ben real quick. You mentioned, you know, in what you just said there, that, you know, his shot profile really hasn't changed. I think, you know, I don't feel this way necessarily, but I think some people would say that, you know, over the course of the season, his shot profile may have changed a little bit, especially in terms of, you know, before he was taking a lot of spot up shots, a lot of like off the catch shots. And now it seems like they're letting him create off the dribble a little bit more. So, you know, how does that factor into kind of what you said earlier?
Well, I would point out that some of those are a little bit misleading because Jalen's stats are very skewed, or were until recently. Now they're finally normalizing in a hurry. But by the start to the year, when they had those clunky lineups, the first 16 games with the dual bigs, and then Jayshon Tate in that front court as well with Christian Wood and Daniel Tice, and some of the season-long numbers, when you look at the shot profile, are skewed based on the lack of spacing at the beginning of the floor, which meant that even when he was potentially open to, you know, creating his own offense off the dribble, it's practically impossible for anybody to do that when the floor is that compressed, even, you know, the truly elite guys at the NBA level. So has it gotten a little bit easier for him to create the last couple of weeks now that, you know, there's less mouths to feed and there's no Dennis Schroeder, Eric Gordon, Christian Wood? Perhaps, but I do think if you look at the season as a whole, some of this stuff was happening anyway. It's just for a long time, the, you know, his overall sort of shot profile was skewed based on that first 15, 16 games. Whereas now the sample is continuing to, you know, that 15, 16 games is getting a smaller part of the sample. And so, you know, certainly these trends have accelerated now that, you know, the training wheels are fully off and, you know, you're not trying to get Christian Wood, Eric Gordon, Dennis Schroeder involved anymore. There's even more shot attempts. There's more creation available. But I would just say this is sort of the acceleration of a trend that was generally already in progress, with maybe the slight exception of the second half of January when he got in that really bad funk, maybe the rookie wall, whatever you want to call it. But I would just say that some of it's just the sample becoming larger and, you know, the statistical noise from the terrible spacing lineup at the beginning, you know, starting to fade away into the small subset that, you know, ultimately we'll view it as.
Right. And if going by that, the fact that we're seeing this year one is a perfect way to tie it into the next point of the segment, which is who do you see as like a cornerstone? Who do you draft around, if at all? And the fact that Jalen is doing this at year one and the way he's doing it, and the fact that he's so proficient off the ball. Like, I've called him his last stretch since the beginning of February. He and especially now after the vets have sat, as some sort of combination between Steph Curry and I'm not saying he's Steph Curry, don't take this the wrong way, between the play styles of Steph Curry and Zach LaVine. In the sense that he has Zach LaVine's athleticism, and he's going hard to the basket every single time. He's going to blow by you with his athleticism. But then off the ball, and even on the ball, he's constantly looking for the next angle for him to relocate to get a three off completely uncontested. There's been play after play after play where we see he drives in, there's no solution. He passes the ball back, and he's immediately relocating to the three-point line, and most of the time the defender doesn't even bother to, like, he's moving way too much, and that's what happens with Curry. Like, the dude's moving much. Like, defenders just lose guys like that. And that's the main part of what makes him, and I'll preface by doing my take on it, that's what makes him the only guy I see as a cornerstone, absolute cornerstone on this team. Because besides your skill, to be a cornerstone, it's also how easy is it to build a team around you, right? Mm-hmm. Sengun is someone who's really skilled, but the archetype of him is, unless he hits 90-95% of his potential, it's going to be hard to build around him because he's not the greatest defender, he doesn't have the best size, right? He can overcome that like Jokic does, like Sabonis does, even though they're a little bit bigger, because they're really elite offensively, right? And for Sengun to become that, he needs to hit 99-95% of his ceiling. Can he become a cornerstone in 1 year or two and maybe proven wrong? Absolutely. But right now, the reason Jalen is my only cornerstone is because, well, first of all, he's shown the most and he's like completely popped off the past 2 months. And then the fact that a guard that moves off the ball that much, this is so willing to do that, combined with the talent that he does have, with the work ethic, with the athleticism, there's no clear pinpoint weakness that you can attribute to him that's not easily workable. Like, to Sengun, you could say, oh, he isn't the best defender because he's not the quickest on his feet or he's not tall enough. With Jalen, there's just no such concern. And the fact that he plays off the ball so well makes it so he's the perfect co-star to literally any other star in this league, because if you can play off the ball, you avoid the typical Russell Westbrook, James Harden, your turn, my turn. He can complement whatever star with the ball or without the ball that you have. So the other thing that this provides is, even if you want Jalen to be the first option, he can be the first option, but there's so many possessions as the game goes on, and any title team doesn't just have one main option. There will always be touches for someone who can be like a primary ball handler or someone who needs the ball in their hands with Jalen, because like on-ball scorer, off-ball scorer, ball-dominant point guard, I don't know, jump ball forward, post center, whatever you include there, it's a perfect fit because there's just no clear weakness, and even his shot distribution shows you that he's fine playing it either way, and his willingness to do that is mostly why I'm like, whatever you do, this guy's going to be a part of it.
Yeah. And by the way, to your point about the Curry comparison, that goes back into what I was saying earlier about the shot profile. I think one of the things that's really changed, and I know it's simple, but I think it's true, the fact that more threes are going in makes him more willing to experiment and try those things. Some of it is less, you know, sort of giving him more freedom, and some of it's just the fact that now that he's getting results to this extent, it's sort of giving him even more freedom just in terms of his own psychology to keep pushing the boundaries and to keep being aggressive. I think that's honestly the biggest thing. Whereas, you know, if he's shooting 30% from three, like he was earlier in the year, then of course you miss, you know, your first two or three, you're going to naturally be a little bit hesitant. That's just normal, especially when you're 19, 20 years old, psychology in the NBA, playing with a team full of professionals. So some of it is just, you know, in your comparison to Curry, while some people listening may say, wow, that's lofty praise for a year one rookie, but I get it. The extent to which he has pushed the envelope in recent weeks with, you know, obviously his shooting, his accuracy, the volume, but also, as you said, the movement, the angles, the things that he does. I mean, yeah, it's very distinctive. And it's not just the James Harden, Russell Westbrook, you know, your turn, my turn possessions. He's making an impact in other ways as well. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you. He's the clear cornerstone, and he's the only one, you know, that I would point out that's supposed to be a cornerstone. And that's big for me, because when you go into, and I know it's going to be segment two that we talk about, you know, hypothetical trades this offseason, or do you put it off to 2023, which is the, you know, what we've thought for years is the big offseason, and probably still will be, because that's when you have cap space. You know, if you are talking about potentially doing anything this summer, you have to, you know, take a leap of faith, because none of these guys, other than maybe Jalen the last couple of weeks, are at a star level now. And so I think it's, you know, you have to sort of combine what the eye test is telling you, and what, you know, when you have your fanboy hat on and what you're wanting to happen, with the reality of, you know, hey, if these guys were drafted in the mid to late first round, there's a reason why they were not perceived as being truly elite talents at that time. And, you know, with Şengün, obviously the defensive issues are one thing. He has gotten better at not fouling. I forgot who led this discussion earlier in the week. But with these guys as young as they are, it's not unprecedented. I think it was actually Craig Ackerman during the game talking about, you know, how Kevin Durant is really 7 feet now, how he clearly grew from the point at which he entered the NBA at 19 or 20. He grew by an inch or two. And yeah, if that could happen to Şengün and he could get an extra inch or two and become 6'10", 6'11", I would feel so much better about, you know, his floor scenario based on just having a guy who's closer to 7 foot, just what that would mean near the rim. But right now, look, he's exceeded expectations for his draft slot for sure, but I'm not willing to put him in the cornerstone tier just yet, especially because the second guy that's going to be a cornerstone, as long as you get in the top four of this draft, and maybe even the top five if Sharp declares, and we'll see what the, you know, the reviews are on him when he goes on the draft circuit. But definitely, if you can just get in the top four, and maybe even if they don't win the lottery, maybe they can trade up because they have so many assets. Any of those top four are potentially good enough between Chet, Paolo, Jabari, and Jaden Ivey to where they immediately, I don't think they're at Jalen Green's tier, but they are immediately your number two. And then everyone else in your organization, you know, there's a lot of pieces that I like that I could see being around when the Rockets are next to playoff team, but none that I would say, okay, they've got to be here no matter what. Because Jalen, and then to a lesser extent, whoever you get out of this first round, especially if it's the top four, those are your guys. And then after that, you want optimal players that you can fit with them. The other point I would raise, and this gets into the second segment a little bit more, but just to prepare people, if you were to make a trade this summer or in 2023, you're almost certainly going to have to give up not just future draft considerations, but something that's a known quantity. You're not going to be able to swing an impact trade in the NBA. You know, even what the Rockets did for Harden, and that was, you know, a 31-year-old James Harden, they still had, you know, in that trade, Victor Oladipo, who at the time was a pretty big brand name and they did expect more from. Now, of course, we've talked about Oladipo ad nauseum. The, you know, the variance of Oladipo was part of the thought and part of the logic by Raphael Stone. And of course, they bottomed out because Oladipo had nothing left in the tank, and that helped them get Jalen Green. But the point is, even the Harden trade, where the Rockets got this historic haul of draft assets, they still got Oladipo. You're not going to be able to swing a big trade just based on future draft capital. You're going to have to give something tangible. That's just the way these trades work. And so, you know, would it pain me to give up? You know, I know this is going to get me, like, kicked off of Rockets Twitter, but, you know, it would pain me to give up Şengün in the deal, certainly. Josh Christopher, Jayshon Tate, KJ Martin, not saying all in the same deal, but I'm just saying, you know, those are the types of players where you might have to give one or two of them if you strike a big deal. And again, I'm not saying it's going to happen this summer, but I guess what I'm saying is if it presented itself this summer or more likely in 2023, there's no one other than Jalen that I would say, you know what, if a star is available, that guy is not going to be a part of a package. For me, it's Jalen, whoever they get this year at the top of the draft, assuming it's top four. And after that, a lot of guys I like, but none that I'm willing to say 100% they are going to be here.
And to that point, you know, the one you just brought up, Ben, we did a space a few weeks ago with Clutch Fans. And I mentioned in that space, you know, he's a very big advocate for Jabari Smith, right? And his whole point was, you know, Jabari Smith is a high tier role player at the very worst. He's going to be a guy you can probably slot in at the three on a championship level team just with the way he defends and he shoots. And, you know, he'll be good enough just like that. And the point I brought up to him was if, kind of like what you're alluding to, not everyone on this team is still going to be here, you know, when the Rockets are really competing again. And if you end up wanting to, you know, end up making a move, right? Would drafting someone like a Paolo Banchero, who has maybe like a higher superstar upside because of his ability to facilitate, his ability to, you know, work off the dribble more, would that be more advantageous if you are kind of going in knowing, you know, some of these pieces may not be here? This draft, you know, you may have a franchise level guy, but like if you look at next year's draft, you have, you know, Scoot Henderson and Victor Wembanyama and all those people, you know, maybe this is the draft to, you know, you draft a guy potentially thinking of setting yourself up for that type of trade. And, you know, no one in that space brought up trading Şengün. I think everyone in that space was pretty adamant that Şengün was still going to be here. So you framing it in that way is just another you know, and layer on top of that, another machination they could use.
And let's be clear, and it's very important for Rafael Stone to be going through this same analysis, and I'm sure he already is, because this asset that you get out of the draft this year, even if it's number five, which thankfully looks like the worst case scenario, it is still immediately going to be the second most important thing in your organization after Jalen Green. And so your focus has got to be on maximizing that pick, getting the best player you can. Now, if, you know, if there's truly a tie, if two guys are really, really close, then yeah, you know, you can perhaps consider fit with the existing role players and how everything goes together. But in 99% of scenarios, you've just got to pick the best player available and worry about, you know, does it fit with Şengün on the front line? How does it work with, you know, KJ and Jayshon? That's all secondary because those pieces can be dealt later. And I think that's important for, you know, I'm sure some people are listening saying, why are you guys trying to break it down? You know, we like all these players and they all have promising futures. That's true, but tiers are important because with this draft analysis coming up, you know, I'm not going to say that I have the answers. You know, I know you guys are big, well, Paolo in particular, on Paolo. You know, I've come around on Paolo more, although at the moment I'm still leaning Chet. But I think you've got to make that pick unless it's really, really close. And then if it's close, certainly, you know, fit can be a bonus. But
yeah,
I think you've got to make that pick predominantly based on just the overall value, the overall best player available. And that's why it's important to kind of go through this exercise. And I think we're all in agreement that, you know, there's a lot of interesting pieces, but Jalen is the only one that you 100% say that you are building around. Everything else, you know, you sort of be at the draft, be at a trade, you know, you take the superior talent and then you figure out the rest later.
Right. And the thing
and then we'll wrap this segment up. We've gone a little long. So
yeah. And the thing about like when they're drafting, I don't have info about this, but I can't stop thinking that in this draft, people say that's a top tier, right? But each team will likely have a favorite guy. I struggle to believe that a front office can approach a draft and think, oh, we like both of these guys just as much. Because it's just like...
Fair.
It's really hard to do that. Like, they are so different from each other that the valuation, like, each front office has of the different skill sets will tilt them in a certain direction. We're I don't know, two scoring wings. Then, imagine Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are both in the same draft. You could look at it and think, well, like, they could think, well, it's a scoring wing either way, so we don't see much difference. We could even trade back. These three guys are so different that I can't imagine a front office looking at the all three of them and thinking, oh, we'll take whoever. And it's tough for me because we know how draft goes, and the reason why this is so contentious is I value something that makes me think Paolo is the best. Clutch fans value something that makes them think Jabari is the best. You value something that makes you think Chet's the best. And after you identify what this thing is that you're valuing higher, it's tough to move away from it because it's tough to look at the other guys because after you decide what it is that you value more, you're going to tunnel in on it. It's just how humans work.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good stopping point. So when we come back, we're going to keep on going with this cornerstone discussion and you know some of the other pieces that we think may be tradable and untradable. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And continuing on here on the Launchpad podcast with our super special guest, Ben DuBose of the Rockets Wire. So in the first thing, we talked a little about Jalen Green's breakout and, you know, kind of what that means for, you know, roster construction, stuff like that going forward. We're going to continue on that topic. You know, in the vein of, we mentioned some guys, you know, maybe traded and things like that. You know, Ben, you know, you have some very, very poignant thoughts on, you know, how you think the Rockets handle trades and handle, you know, how they're doing these, this franchise cornerstone maneuvering in the future. So, you know, go ahead and take it away.
Yeah. So to me, the discussion we were just having, and we talked predominantly about front court pieces, you know, I think we should also be talking about Josh Christopher and Kevin Porter Jr., of course, when we're looking at these tiers. But the reason we're doing it, of course, is not only to sort of frame the draft discussion. And of course, I think we're in agreement that you've got to make that draft decision independent of basically everything other than maybe Jalen, because other than Jalen, everyone is potentially movable if you need it to sort of optimize your stars, Jalen and hopefully who you get out of this draft. But, you know, the other reason is because we're getting to this point, and in the last few weeks, it's gotten a little more real for me because, you know, now the 22 season is ending. We're basically just 1 year away from the 2023 offseason. And we've talked forever about 2023 sort of being the potential timeline for a shift with the Rockets. And Paolo, you've laid it out perfectly on this podcast before, because of course the pick obligations for OKC start kicking back in the 2023-2024 season. So this is when the 2023 offseason, you sort of pivot, and it's natural because you have, at the moment, your position to have cap space. John Wall, Christian Wood, Eric Gordon, all those salaries come off the books. And so we've talked about ad nauseum before. 2023 is the pivot point, especially now that you already got Jalen Green and Şengün. You're going to get a couple of good picks this year, including one very high one, and potentially one in 2023 as well. And so then you've got your young talent. Some of these guys are on the way up, and then you reinforce them with free agency or trade acquisitions in 2023. And then that next season after that is when potentially you really make a real push in terms of, you know, towards the play-in tournament, the playoffs, whatever it may be, depending on exactly how quickly Jalen goes on his route, what we hope is a route to superstardom, yada, yada. Well, the reason that, you know, I've sort of wanted to talk about this the last few days, I've started looking a lot more, I guess because we're only like 1 year away, trying to get more specific. In that, you know, in the past, it's been so far off. Just like, okay, we'll see what the NBA landscape looks like by 2023. Now it's getting close enough. I'm like, okay, let's look at these names. And the reality is, the free agent market, not going to say they wouldn't pursue it all, but for the most part, you know, the big names in 2023, LeBron and James Harden at the forefront of the list. Bradley Beal, Kyrie Irving could. Obviously, John Wall and Russell Westbrook, but come on. Those are not going to be fits for the Rockets. But the bottom line is, you know, the bigger names in 2023, and I guess this is true in a lot of years, tend to be more of your veterans that are in your 30s. But I'm not saying they would never pursue a guy in their 30s, but I think in an ideal world, you'd want your impact guy, be it free agent or trade, to be, you know, certainly it's not going to be like 2021, like Jalen, Şengün, KPJ, but someone closer in age alignment to where you hope that, you know, a couple of years after that, when you're really trying to make a title push, that you're not actually seeing that big acquisition decline, that at least there's some age alignment there. So where this sort of ties into what we were just discussing is that to get that kind of age alignment, more and more that's happening via the trade market for a couple of reasons. Number one, you know, these young stars, they want their first big contract. So you're seeing more and more guys just take the money and then figure out a way to force their way out of town later, call it a crazy situation, whatever you want. Also, teams are getting smarter in that, you know, they don't want to risk losing these young studs for no compensation because, you know, ideally, number one, you want a young stud, but if things, you know, are unsalvageable, then the second best scenario is trade them for peak value, which you're not going to get if they're close to free agency. So teams are being more proactive in managing those relationships. And if it's not working out, then, you know, you trade them with 3-4 years left on the contract rather than, you know, when they're close to expiring and you have less leverage. So because of that, you know, if you accept the premise that a trade is probably more likely to bring in, you know, a truly impact guy than a free agent, then really your timeline theoretically could be as soon as 2022. Because the way it works out in 2023, now, yes, you would have cap space. And that cap space, that cap flexibility is an asset because the team you're trading for, let's say hypothetically like New Orleans and Zion, let's say Zion declares that situation crazy, can't be fixed, and you want Zion. Your cap space, your cap flexibility is an asset because you would not have to give New Orleans any bad contracts to make the math work. Or maybe Zion isn't the best example because he's in his rookie year. Let's say, even though I know it's more contentious, you know, Donovan Mitchell with Utah. Your offer is better if you don't have to give them bad money. Well, here's the thing. As of 2022, the Rockets can trade for basically any player in the NBA without giving anyone bad money, because John Wall, Christian Wood, Eric Gordon, you've got like $80 million in expiring salaries. You can make anything work. Now, I don't expect them to push the timetable forward for, you know, a lot of reasons, and everybody knows it. Number one, how attractive are the Rockets with the worst record in the NBA to any of these guys that might come available this summer? I don't know. They'd have to want to come to Houston. I don't know if Houston is quite to that level yet. The other, from a Houston perspective, more pressing factor, of course, is that 2023, you have control of your own draft pick. So unless you really feel that somebody this summer is way better than your options in 2023, then you may as well wait until 2023. It's not like you're going to win a title next year anyway. And then you reap the benefit of getting one more high, at least mid-lottery pick, and maybe a high lottery pick next year. So all of that is why I still think 2023 is likely. But if you accept the premise that a trade is more likely than a straight-up free agent signing for your big move of significance to go with Jalen and whoever you get high in the draft this year, then theoretically you could poke around this offseason. And, you know, some of the names mentioned, you know, we talked about Donovan Mitchell if the Jazz go out in the first round. I don't know if he's good enough. Powell pointed out on Twitter, you know, Luka, Jaylen Brown, those are more, you know, ideal names to sort of cash in your assets. Question is, of course, whether those guys come available anytime soon, because Dallas and Boston are playing great ball right now. Of course, it's speculative. You know, you hope a year or two from now that's not the case. Zion and New Orleans, we'll see what happens there, although it's a question of whether the Pelicans would deal with a division rival. Another name I threw out, and I'm sure some people are going to recoil when I say this, I mentioned this to Paolo via DM, was Michael Porter Jr. out of Denver, only because, number one, I do know for a fact the Rockets had interest in him during the Harden trade talks of 2020, and because of the added risk, yes, I understand the back surgery, but because of the added risk, you could potentially get him for a much lower investment cost. Not in terms of his contract, but in terms of, you know, the future assets. You know, to get Donovan Mitchell, you would have to basically give up the farm in terms of pretty much all of the future Brooklyn assets from the Harden trade, and perhaps, you know, more than that. I don't think you have to give up your pick this year, but other than that, you have to give up everything. Whereas, you know, for a Porter Jr. type, you wouldn't at all. Now, again, I'm not saying I think any of these are likely. I think the far more likely scenario is that you have a quiet offseason and you just sort of play into 2023. But the reason we do these sort of thought exercises about the tiers, about the guys available, I think, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And if you're Rafael Stone and you're convinced that somebody hits the market this summer in 2022, if it happens, if that guy through his agent shows interest in Houston and you think that guy has a high, you know, likelihood of being better than your options in 2023, you have to at least ask the question. I'm not saying you for sure pursue it, but you're close enough now, especially because, again, you don't have any bad money anymore. You can make the math work now with expirings, which is not going to hurt your asset value in the deal. Now, again, you would have to give up draft assets, but that's true even in 2023. Nobody's going to trade them just in a cap space. You're going to have to give up draft assets either way. I guess all I'm saying is that you would have to at least be open to exploring this summer. Not acting, and it may not work out because the other star may not want Houston coming off the worst record in the league anyway. This may be just a pointless question. But I think you at least have to be open to looking around. Does that make sense to you guys? Is that fair?
Yeah, I definitely think that's fair. Yeah, and Paula, go ahead and respond. I got follow-up for Ben after this.
Yeah, I think it ultimately comes down to how...
Did we lose him?
Yeah, we lost him. Don, you want to jump in?
Yeah. So I was going to follow up with, I guess I'll give my comments on this and have a follow up about, you know, you mentioned John Wall there for a second. So we'll get into Wall here in a second, but I think I would agree that the timeline stuff has been really, I'm not going to say overplayed, but I will definitely agree that at the end of the day, right, the trend in the league is absolutely that you're getting these guys through trades. Just I mean, we haven't seen anyone really make the big free agency move since, I think, LeBron going back to the Lakers was a free agency move. Is that correct?
Yeah, and even LeBron was in his 30s. I guess what I would say with the general trend is that if you're wanting a younger guy, which is what makes sense for the Rockets in this current configuration of the team, and I guess, you know, you can never say never about, you know, the guys in their 30s, but for the most part, both from the Rockets standpoint and the fact that guys in their 30s are typically ring chasers wanting to literally win a ring that first year as opposed to develop with a young core. You know, LeBron and the Lakers are the last, you're right, and even that was a guy in his 30s, mid-30s, I believe. So, with regards to the ages that the Rockets are likely to be interested in these guys, trade is more likely whether you do it now, whether you do it in 2023, or maybe, you know, even if the market dictates, you wait until 2024. Regardless, trade is the way, and I guess once you accept that premise, which I've started done more now that I've started looking at the names and start thinking about, like, concrete scenarios, then it's sort of like, you know what, you have to be a little bit more flexible. Maybe it's not 2023, maybe it's 2024 instead, or maybe it's 2022, but you just sort of have to keep an open mind because you don't fully control the dynamic.
All right, we got Prod back in from the airport. go ahead and respond to what Ben was saying.
Sorry for the background noise. It's going to come back here in 2 seconds and then it's going to go away. So give me 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And it's going away. It's the dude cleaning the floor.
Gotcha.
Recording an airport podcast at 2 a.m. local time.
Yeah, hey, what you have to deal with. We're going to power through it. So, all right, go ahead and respond to Ben real quick.
The key part is, do you see that play? You got to trade for a player that you can see being a part of your core long term. And to me, that needs to be a player that meets first that it's not a player that's been used to contending because. Give me a second again.
Go ahead and mute real fast.
All right. So you can't be a player that's used to contending because he'll come in with unrealistic expectations and the Rockets will not be ready to fulfill those expectations. So you're risking having another player that's unhappy, right? And then it needs to be a young player. So what I would say that might be more feasible is instead of trading for Donovan Mitchell, trading for someone like DeAndre Ayton, who's someone who might not be a max guy, but he fits what you're trying to do. He's a tier player. He's young. He's 22, 23. He would be a higher tier player than Shengun regardless. And he's an archetype that's really flexible when it comes to team building, right? It's someone that you won't lock into a certain type of team. And what comes from that is this league is stacked with young talent and on their rookie deals, in my opinion, more than ever. When you look at the talent that just came in, the talent that came in 2 years ago, the Anthony Edwards draft class, the year before that with the Zion draft class, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be in contention for max contracts or close to it that aren't going to be paid that because there's just not enough space in the league for all of those max contracts. Ayton is the first real example of this, but I can see looking down the line, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish. Let me think about it. What's the name? DeAndre Hunter, Tyrese Maxey down the line with Embiid and Harden on that team, and Tobias Harris. I can definitely see a lot of these guys being on teams that won't be willing to give up that much money. And so you can use that as leverage and say, hey, I've got all of this cap space next year. Why don't you get some assets back for this guy that you're probably going to lose anyways? And you might get a better deal than what you'd get in a full-on trade. Just because I think whoever we trade for probably can't be a fully formed star that has expectations to compete right away. Because if it's a star like that, then likely won't even want to come place.
Yeah, it may resolve itself.
Yeah, and then I know you don't want to get too stuck on the Donovan Mitchell example, but he's a good example of someone who I would not want to trade for because, well, he's used to being in the playoffs and he probably will want to go to a team that's in the playoffs.
Probably.
He's also not a really high ceiling guy, at least in my opinion. Like, he's a really good player, but I'm not sure he can be a number one or a number two in a championship team. And then the third thing is, he plays basically the position that Jalen plays. Now, can you make them work together? You can. As I said, Jalen is so versatile that he can work with any type of star. But Mitchell is like, he's not a point guard, so it's not really, you can have dynamic where he has the ball and Jalen is moving. He's also not a good defender, so you can't slide him to the three and live with it. So you basically, if you bring him in, he's got to play the one. That might be good for his defense and for his size, but I'm not sure. Like, it, as I said, it would lock you into team building that's going to cut some of your options going forward. So that's why I like guys more like Jalen Brown, that is like at the same stage as Donovan Mitchell, but can fit into multiple different team dynamics. DeAndre Hunter is the same thing. Cam Reddish, RJ Barrett, these are all guys that I think are kind of fit into archetypes that are easy to build around.
The only pushback...
opposite of... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say the only pushback I would say is that in this case, I do think it's the one advantage of a trade. The downside is that, you know, obviously you're giving up assets as opposed to a strict free agency signing. But, you know, to your point about mentality, it sort of resolves itself. If Mitchell's approach in this hypothetical is what, you know, you fear it is, then he's not going to want to come here anyway.
Exactly.
And so it sort of resolves itself. So I think that's sort of the good thing about this, is that in this scenario where Mitchell actually is an option, it's only because his mindset is a little bit different. And I'm not saying that I have any info that it is, but I'm just saying that's the good thing, is that, you know, this is sort of a pointless hypothetical to a degree with him specifically. But I really enjoy your point about the market inefficiency, because you're right. You know, the talent that we've seen the last like 3-4 years coming in, you know, when you compare it to like 3-4 years before that, it really is a big, you know, surplus compared to typical NBA spending levels. So yeah, maybe some guys fall through the cracks and that's the leverage. That's a really good point. And by the way, mentioning RJ Barrett, I love the fact that you have no qualms about going after Nick's Twitter again. Because that was really hilarious.
Oh, man.
Yeah, especially when you tweeted that Altuve stuff is freaking amazing. But
I got a Hakeem gif off in there as well. You know, I think I lost some time, but I had a good time doing it.
But the general point is accurate. I think there's a surplus, and maybe that's a good way to look at it, is, you know, try and take advantage of, you know, these situations where a guy's about to get squeezed, and hey, something in the way of future draft assets is better than nothing. Don, did you want to jump in?
So I'm cool with, you know, both of the sides that y'all laid out there. What I was going to bring up was something that came out a little bit earlier, because like I said, you mentioned the John Wall stuff.
Yeah.
Earlier today, our very own friend of the show, who's currently with us, Ben DuBose, linked up with Michael Scotto of Hoops Hype, and y'all put out a report. You know, just a little excerpt from this: the Rockets will have time to look for a trade to move Wall. You know, the report was that he was going to opt into a player option for next year, correct?
Yeah.
He's going to opt into his player option next year. And then given that, the Rockets have time to look for a trade. If Houston can't find a trade partner for Wall, his representation at Clutch Sports is expected to work with the Rockets on a buyout agreement before next season.
Yeah.
So, you know, given that, given this new information, right, I think a lot of people assumed that that was the direction it was going to go eventually, right?
Yeah.
It would be some sort of buyout if they couldn't trade him in. A lot of people got their hopes up at the trade deadline. Hey, you know, the Lakers are struggling. Westbrook for Wall. You know, those are the two pieces that just fit perfectly in a swap back and forth, because those Supermax shuffles, you can only, you know, realistically move so many players. Now that we know that there's, you know, there's going to be some sort of closure on the Wall situation before the next season starts, I think, now, depending on what happens, right, you're going to have another roster spot, one, so you can explore more things with that. And then two, you know, you're going to have the money, the buyout that's going to be on the books. And then after this year, it'll go away. We just mentioned how, you know, a lot of these guys are coming in through trades and stuff like that. And because they're going to buy Wall out, you're going to have that big, not a hole on the roster, but you have all that cap space now. So my question to both of y'all is, you know, given that we don't think these big stars are going to move with cap space, how do you think the Rockets should move or use that cap space to maybe find some mid-level salaries that they can, you know, maybe throw together in a trade the way that the Lakers even did to get Russell Westbrook over there, right?
So I'm going to mention one very specific scenario, and I mentioned it as a hypothetical. Well, let's be clear, it is a hypothetical, but it just makes a lot of sense when I start looking at the market and thinking. But I could see using Christian Wood. We have barely talked about Christian because I think we're all in agreement that for a lot of reasons, good player, but not really in alignment with the Rockets long term. Unless, I mean, you never say never. If he gives an absolute sweetheart deal for an extension, you know, he's not worthless. But the odds, in my opinion, are heavily on the side of Christian Wood not being on the Rockets in a couple of years when they're really making their, you know, ascension. So I could see a scenario where, you know, I doubt the Lakers are going to revisit the Wall Westbrook straight up thing and then suddenly give a first, because if they were going to do that, you know, they could have basically gotten two seasons out of Wall, two potential postseasons, not anymore, but at the time they were potential postseason team at the deadline. I don't know why they wouldn't the offseason only for one, the same deal. In my opinion, that ship has sort of sailed, and that if the Lakers were willing to sort of take the season for what it is, I don't think that even if, you know, there's the obvious ties between Clutch Sports, John Wall, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, if the Lakers were willing to deal with this bleep show the last couple of months, I don't think they're suddenly in the offseason then going to give you the first round asset that, you know, at least for just a John Wall, Russell Westbrook trade, straight up. I just don't see it. And then the report from Scotto, let's just be honest, that's completely fair. Like, John Wall was willing to be nice last season and not try and force for a buyout because it's almost unprecedented. A guy with that much, an insane amount of money and multiple years left in his contract to force his way out. But 1 year, yeah, that's more reasonable. And if they can't trade him, you know, they clearly tried at the deadline. They couldn't. They're going to try again in the offseason. If you have two basically trade windows that pass and you can't do it, then at some point you just got to bite the bullet and say, you know what, whatever. Let's just let him go. He can latch on to a contender, and then you get the potential cap space after the year. But the one scenario I would look into, maybe you can get that future first of the Lakers, which could be even more valuable given their, you know, murky outlook beyond the last couple of years. If you attach Christian Wood to John Wall, and the Lakers are looking at it as potentially getting a couple of guys as opposed to just one. And of course, you can push back to that by saying, well, why didn't the Lakers try to do that at the deadline? Well, that's one where you can say, look, they only had one future pick then, as opposed to now they will have another pick once that 2029 cycle, once the draft starts in June, is able to be dealt. So I would just say the most optimistic I am when I look around the league for Wall and trying to find some way that you can get something out of that contract, because they're not going to trade him just to trade him. They're not going to take any bad money. They'd only do it if it's something productive.
And they shouldn't. They shouldn't. Right. There's no reason to do that.
Yeah. I do wonder about putting Wall and Wood together to try and get a draft asset, because, you know, I said on the podcast with Michael, and I agree with sort of the sentiment that I've heard from a few people, that Christian Wood, given some of the maturity issues, the off-court concerns that we've all talked about from time to time, I think he's best suited with, you know, a veteran alpha. And to the Rockets' credit, by the way, when the Rockets brought in Christian Wood in November 2020, they were still trying to make things work with James Harden, and you know, they were about to trade for John Wall. There was no immediate pivot to a full-blown rebuild. They played John Wall that first season. So there was sort of a hierarchy. It wasn't like what we saw this year, which is where Christian Wood basically is the veteran, and it's sort of his team. And I think that freedom is what, you know, begins to have a little bit too much room from time to time and leads to some of the problems that drives Paolo in particular crazy. But but yeah, I do think that Christian is a better fit for, you know, a team that has like a LeBron James, a Kevin Durant, that type of thing, to where you can play to some of his skills and sort of mitigate some of the other concerns that are out there. And so I just wonder. I don't have anything concrete telling me this, but I just do wonder if maybe there's a way you can combine the Wall and Wood situations and maybe get the type of asset that you're not going to get from just Wall alone.
Prad, you want to react to that, and then we'll probably round out the segment?
I guess I think Ben pretty much knocked it out of the park. To answer your like part of your question, you said, like, how do you use that cap space if not to sign free agents? Well, you can do many things. You can
not necessarily to sign like a big name free agent, right?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You could use it to sign, you know, smaller pieces. Kind of what I was
You can sign smaller pieces. You can take salary dumps. You can use it as a threat, as I said before, to a team that has an expiring restricted free agent. You can say, like, I'm like, you know what the Cavs did with Jared Allen and the Rocket? They said, we're paying this guy $20 million a year. You either trade us, you either trade him to us now and you get an asset for it, or you let him hit free agency and you're going to lose him anyway because it makes no sense for you to match that kind of offer. So that's a big asset of having cap space. That's a new age way of using your cap space.
Great point.
You can also do the old 1+1 deals that the Knicks were doing before they made the playoffs. So you can find some role players that can fit around your stars and make the game easier for them and sign them to 1+1s with a team option. And if they knock it out of the park, you pick up the team option and you can trade them for more value. If they don't, you can just reject it and you have the cap space anyways the year afterwards. There's many ways to play with it. But besides that, it's also an asset to, in trade talks, to not need to give back a big salary in a trade and just absorb whatever star you're trying to trade for straight into cap space.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of to sum it all up and tie everything together in a bow. That's why I still think 2023 is clearly the odds-on favorite over 2022, because you don't even have to give back an expiring contract. You can literally take it into cap space, and then, of course, there's the added benefit of the Rockets, in all likelihood, get one more mid to high lottery pick next year as well before you sort of make this pivot to a more aggressive posture in building your team.
All right. Ran a little bit long. I'm sure no one watching at home is going to be mad about that. You know, this has been some incredible discussion. Love being able to talk to you two guys, because you are super knowledgeable. But we are going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the draft, a little bit more in depth, you know, go a little bit further down than maybe even just top three. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. And moving into our last segment here on the Launchpad Podcast with our super special guest, Ben DuBose of the Rockets Wire. We've talked about Jalen. We've talked about some franchise cornerstones and some team building stuff. Now let's talk about some of the guys that are going to be involved in that team building process, right? I think everyone has, we're at a point now where most people have watched the NCAA tournament and they've seen Chet, Paolo, and Jabari Smith. Some people probably even saw, you know, AJ Griffin and Jaden Ivey play as well. And those are the two guys, and we'll add a couple more guys to the mix here, but, you know, the Rockets are now in control of their destiny pick-wise. If they lose out, they'll have, you know, the worst record, and then they'll have the best chance for the top pick. If they were to win some games, you know, they shuffle with the Magic, and it can really go any direction there. But given that, right, who do y'all like if the Rockets don't make it into the top three? That four through six range, which players do y'all like in that range? You know, for, you know, we said maybe you draft BPA, maybe you take fit into account if they're very close, you know, whatever direction you want to go with it. Let's go to Prav first. You know, you're the draft guy here.
So I'll be honest with you. I'm not the biggest Jaden Ivey guy. People will point to it and say, oh, that's because of KPJ. It's not really because of KPJ. I think Ivey brings a lot of the same things as Jalen brings. And I think Ivey is going to have to go through the same learning curve that we're putting Porter through right now, where he's not a natural playmaker. He is someone who's going to need to learn how to balance the game, learn how to, when to take it slow, when to take it fast, learn to read defenses and know what to do. He is someone who very much at the college level forced his athleticism and forced his strengths onto opposing teams rather than to analyze their weaknesses and play towards that. So that's one of the reasons why some people are really high on Ivy. I'm not really that high, but still, I think there's a clear tier drop after it. So I still have Ivy number four. When it comes to number five, I think this is the second worst team, the worst team in the league, they need to be swinging for upside. And I don't see a star in AJ Griffin. I don't see a star in Benedict Mathurin. I don't see a star in Kevin Durant. I don't see a star in Keegan Murray. And the fact that I'm so low on this draft in that stretch makes the gamble on Shaedon Sharpe all the more enticing. I think he, as a 6'6", 6'7", shooting guard who will probably be able to play the one, the two, or the three, the fact that he was the number one rated high school prospect, he's my number five for the Rockets. I think they should still be swinging for upside. And And him declaring, and I think he will, because it really doesn't make sense for him not to. If he doesn't, he's going to face a way stronger draft class next year, where this year he probably goes, if not top five, top six, or top seven. So he's my number five. I think it might be a little bit of bias because there's no real footage of him in college, so there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
What turned me off on the other guys is not there to turn me off on him. So it's maybe a little bit unfair, but his age, the fact that he's straight out of high school, the fact that you can mold him into what you want, I think it's mostly I'm so low on these other guys, let's just take this kind of lottery ticket and mm-hmm. see if we can in-swing for the fences. That's pretty much how I feel like at the four and five spots.
Yeah, I've been a big AJ Griffin guy all year, but I'm coming around on Sharp as well due to the upside. I've talked to some people that I trust, and they really, really like him. Now, you know, there's the caveat, as you mentioned, that we haven't actually seen him. So, you know, these other guys are getting graded on a much tougher curve than Sharp, who's kind of like the shiny new toy that, you know, none of us have heard anything, you know, negative about. So we're sort of looking at the upside. What I would say, number one, him declaring is massive because no matter what, it gives the Rockets more options. And maybe, you know, depending on who gets the four spot, maybe there's a team at number four who goes for the higher floor. Like, you know, a year ago, nobody would have thought that Scottie Barnes was going to go ahead of Jalen Suggs, except, you know, Toronto for various reasons. And as of now, that looks like it was the right pick. But maybe there's a curveball and, you know, a Jaden Ivey or someone in that top tier ends up falling to five. But the thing that I would mention, number one, I'm coming around on Sharp because of the upside. With Griffin, I still really like him a lot, but there's enough of a question with that knee that, in a perfect world, I would want the Rockets to come up with a guy in this draft that I feel much more about. Not that necessarily he's going to be a star, but at least the potential is there because winning a title, being the best team out of 30, is so damn hard. You need multiple guys that could potentially, you know, be at that level. The reason I would be so excited about getting, and I've hinted at this before, and this is sort of a creative non-answer to this final segment. If the Rockets end up at five for me, what I'm looking at doing, unless I feel really good about Sharp and the Rockets are going to learn more information when they go through the pre-draft process, but I would try hard to trade up. We know for a fact, and this is why I'm so excited about them getting, you know, that floor of number five, because if the lottery doesn't go your way, it would be so much easier to trade up from number five, in my opinion, to say three or four than it would be number six or number seven. Because if you're dropping down a tier, the team that's willing to do that would want to then at least have their pick of that next tier that can take it a number of different directions. And if Sharp is involved, have a guy that maybe has the highest ceiling of all. In my opinion, you know, the dream scenario for the Rockets is getting, you know, one of those top four. And I think I'm with Paolo, especially one of those top three. And in my opinion, Sharp declaring makes it all the more likely that you're going to be able, especially if you're at number five, which as long as they don't win, they are going to be number five at worst. They have the game of separation relative to Orlando as we're recording this Thursday night. There's no coin flip, nothing involved. As long as the Rockets don't win one of their last two games, five is the worst case. They're going to go in with the number one positioning slot into the draft lottery. And we know good and well, this is part of why Rafael Stone has collected all these future picks, be it a trade to move up in the draft, trades, as we talked about earlier, for established players elsewhere. There are going to be consolidation moves, both with players on the roster. We've talked about that a ton this year in our previous podcast, and also with regards to your picks. You're not going to use all these picks. So, you know, people talk a lot about potentially packaging, you know, the Houston and Brooklyn picks this year. If you fall to five, you could also, you know, keep the Brooklyn pick and, you know, maybe throw in the Milwaukee pick a year from now, or, you know, one of the, or a future swap right in the future, something along those lines. The point is this, if you don't get lucky in the lottery, in my opinion, this is a prime spot where you use your depth of players. And, you know, it could be a pick and a player for that matter. Maybe one of your extension guys coming up that maybe if you're not comfortable on giving them, you know, the deal that they want, well, maybe this is a point to sort of sell high on them. If you're not sold on, you know, Jayshon Tate, for example, if you're not sold that you're going to be in financial alignment after next year, maybe that's someone that you could sell high on and use that to move up. But I guess if the Rockets aren't in the top four, and maybe even if they're at number four, I'm thinking about trying to get up to get one of those three top bigs. And I think they have the assets to do it. You know, I know we don't want to talk about that too much yet because hopefully the lottery goes our way and, you know, you have a top three pick at the end of the night on May 17th, I believe it is. But if they don't, then I think the Rockets are in a pretty good spot where, you know, it's not easy to trade up by any means, but especially if Sharp declares, there's enough tantalizing talent there and there's enough assets from a Houston perspective that if you're at number five at the worst, then yeah, I think you could potentially move up one or two spots. And so that would be my focus in that scenario.
Right. And another thing is, since the top tier that you talk about, these three bigs, there is very much a world where one of the teams picking top three doesn't want to take a big. Like, yep. It's yep. They're really different prospects, but they all play the same position. And the fact that the tier right below that is a guard and a wing.
Great point.
Makes it so, I mean, it's not like last year where in the top three, you could get a center in Mobley, shooting guard in Jalen, or if you want to call him a small forward, playmaking wing in Cade. Mm-hmm. Or you want to get a two-point guard in the form of Suggs. Like, you have a lot of variety in the sense that there wasn't real motivation to trade down because you could just take your guy there. And in this draft, since there's the clear top three, they all play the same position.
Yep.
You can pretty comfortably trade down and expect your Jaden Ivey or your Shaedon Sharpe that you like to still be there. So I think that's something that works towards trades at the top of this draft happening.
Yeah, and it's also something to watch. You know, when the lottery goes down, it's not just a matter of do the Rockets get in that top four. It's also looking at, you know, if it's not the Rockets, then who are the teams in that top four? And, you know, it can still work to your benefit if a team that feels, you know, pretty set in its front court with young pieces gets in that top four, then that's a prime top three, especially, then that's a prime team that, you know, may look to trade down and acquire, you know, someone in that guard tier instead.
All right. Is everyone comfortable with leaving it there?
Yeah, I am. It's good.
I'm good.
Cool.
I know.
All right.
These are some unprecedented circumstances. We got to get Paolo through security. So
we do need to get him security. We need to make sure he gets here. And I want to say, Will, if you're watching this, which I hope you are, you did a terrible job of heckling me in the group chats while I was trying to host a podcast. So if I was distracted this time, blame Will because he was being funny in the group chats. But with that said, Ben, one more time, tell the people where they can find all of your great work.
Yep. Ben Dubose on Twitter, The RocketsWire on Twitter, and rocketswire.usatoday.com for all the written content. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. Much appreciated. And you
safe travels
we'll
to Paolo.
Of course. And hopefully we get you back on sooner rather than later. We'll see how that goes. You know, just a little teaser right there. Airport Prod. Where can they find your great work at?
Well, right now in Portugal, but in the next few hours, probably in the Netherlands and then in Houston. So
somewhere over the Atlantic Ocean. That's where they can find it.
No, I'm joking. Y'all can find me on Twitter at PaulAlvesNBA. That's PaulAlvesNBA. Everything I do, from podcasts like this one to the live shows on Twitter Spaces to articles about basketball, will find itself linked on there.
And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Don Knock. You can follow the pod at Clutch City CR. If you go to that page, you can find the link tree in the description with, like we said before, the Spotify, the Apple podcast, the YouTube link. I also want to shout out everyone that watched and followed on YouTube. The last two podcasts that we have done have gotten more views than anything we did before we made the jump over to Clutch City Control Room, which is incredible. I think we're over 200 subscribers on the YouTube account right now, which is incredible. Again, thank you guys. It's been the move over to Clutch City Control Room has been literally everything we could have hoped for and more. We gave y'all a great run of pods this first week with Ben and Jackson. And, you know, we have some good guests lined up, you know, for the coming weeks. But for now, we're going to get Prod over here. We're going to get him over to Urban South tomorrow at 6 p.m. Show up there. We'd love to meet all of y'all. I said this a couple times. I'll say it again really quick before we get these guys out of here. If you are on the fence about coming out, just do it. Just come out, meet with people. If you don't enjoy it, you don't have to come back another time, but give it a shot. Going and meeting, networking with other Rockets fans was one of the best things I've ever done. So absolutely recommend it. Hopefully we see all you guys there. That's going to do it for us. Until next time, y'all, be safe and go Rockets.